Hello, my name is Stu Schlackman, and welcome to week two of Business Communications. Today, what I'd like to do is, and you can follow along with me, we'll be looking at the textbook. We're going to start with pages 64 through 67. What today's lesson is going to be on is styles of communication, tone and readability, listening skills, and then finally, questioning techniques, and we're also going to take a look at the ultimate person that asks questions from a biblical perspective, and that's Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. So we'll actually look at a few of those. So let's get started. The first thing is, when we talk about style of communications, as you know, there's several different things, and that's speaking, it's listening, it's writing, and it's reading. Now, understand this, when someone gives a presentation and we have an audience out there listening, here's some pretty interesting statistics. First one is, we retain 20% of what we hear. So when someone's actually listening to something for the first time, their retention level is 40%. But after a day or so, it actually goes down to remembering about 20% or so. So we retain about 20% of what we hear. We retain about 30% of what we see. So both hearing audio and visual, the audio 20 and the visuals 30. So we retain 50% of what we hear and see. Great example of that would be movies. I know that many of you have seen a movie, liked it, and you decide to see the movie again. And when you see the movie the second time, you say, hey, I didn't catch that the first time. So each time we see a movie, we retain actually a little bit more. I know for me, one of my favorite movies is Rudy. And I've seen the movie now close to 100 times, and I actually use it for some motivational examples. And what we see is every time I've seen it, even though it's close to 100 times, there's something else I catch each time. So we retain 50% of what we hear and see. So when you're giving a presentation and you're using PowerPoint slides and you're talking, the retention level goes up. That's the powerful part about visual aids, and we'll be talking about that further down the road in the next few weeks. We also retain 70% of what we say. So being a teacher, professor, as we teach a class, we're actually the best at understanding the material, because what we're doing is reviewing it and saying it in our own mind. So when we practice talking through something, the retention level is 70%. And finally, we retain 90% of what we say and do. When we say something and actually do something along with it, the retention level is 90%. So to give you another example, a lot of you have taken geometry in high school, and if I was to ask you what Pythagorean's theorem was, many of you would say, what is that? Well, really, it's a squared plus b squared equals c squared. But since we heard it, we don't retain it. But if some of you, most of you, I'm sure, have had a bicycle and knows how to ride a bike, but if you haven't rode a bicycle in the last 10 years and I asked you to get on it, would you fall down? And the answer is no, because we did it and we retained it, and it's kind of written into our memories, and that's something that we will never forget. So we retain 90% of what we say and do, and that could be also memorizing scripture, things like that. And what we know is that over years and years, we still remember it. But the weakest of the four verbal communication skills is our listening. And another problem is that when it comes to listening to people, another pretty interesting statistic is that our brain moves four times faster than the words we speak. Statistically, we speak about 180 words a minute. Now, for those of you from the South, it might be 160, and myself being from New York City, it's about 240. You've heard a lot of those commercials on TV where they talk at a million words a second to the point that you almost can't understand it, but it's amazing how fast, actually how we could understand it when someone's talking that fast. And the thing is, we think about 750 words a minute. So what happens in a conversation? You're having a conversation, you're listening to a boring lecture from a professor, and what happens is we lose our concentration and our thoughts start to wander. Why? The reason is we think faster than the words that are spoken to us. Therefore, our mind starts to wander and think of other topics and things we want to do. So we need to learn how to listen better, listen more intently. And there's a few things we need to do. If we are poor listeners, especially in the business world, or actually in any social setting or at church, what happens is people get their feelings hurt. People felt that you are misunderstanding them. What it does in business, it loses sales. It lowers morale within the employees. It impacts our productivity. It also could start rumors, and it could lead to stress. So we need to be very careful and very focused when we listen. We want to become listeners that give undivided attention. Never interrupt the person that we're listening to. And also what's very important is maintaining good eye contact. And what I like to call it is what we call strategic listening. Strategic listening is both active listening and empathic listening. Active listening is listening to what is being said, the actual words. What is the person conveying in the message? Now, the empathic is the how. How is the person talking to you? You could tell if a person is happy, angry, concerned, doubtful. It's more of the feeling side of understanding where the person's coming from. So active and empathic listening becomes strategic listening. And we want to ask questions as we listen to someone, because what this does is help the other person understand that we hear what they say. And that's very important, that the other person feels that we're connected in the conversation. Also, what we want to do is what I like to call in sales is a checkpoint summary. A checkpoint summary is where we stop after a little while and say, now, can I just back up a second? Help me understand if I have what you said correctly. And then we summarize what they said in our own words, which gives us a lot of credibility. So that's very important. The other thing is telephone skills. How do we talk on the phone? What we need to realize is that there are 75 million calls made a day in the United States. So a lot of business is done via the phone. Some etiquette when it comes to the phone is we want to answer the phone on the second or the third ring. I like to typically answer at the first ring if I could get it. It's way better to answer the phone if you could than to let it go to voicemail. And also, if it goes to voicemail, we want to have a very appropriate message, something like, hi, my name is Stu Schlackman. Please leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you. We always want to say thank you, good morning, not good morning, but good day, how are you doing, something like that. We want to, and actually when we leave a message, we want to smile, because if we're physically smiling, it's going to leave a better intention in the tone of our voice. So those are some things when it comes to etiquette that we need to be aware of. Also, if you call someone on a cell phone and they have voicemail, leave a voicemail. I really don't like it when someone calls, and today, with caller ID on cell phones, you know that someone called. And if they don't leave a message, it might leave an impression of, okay, so what did they want? Was it not important that they couldn't leave a message? Now, I know for me, my son Brian does that all the time for me. To me, he calls about 5 times in a half an hour, but never leaves a message. But he's my son, so I could understand what he's doing there. So now, let's go ahead and turn to pages 133 to 148 in your books. And this part is on effective writing. Writing is another form of communication. And for myself, just to let you know, 3 years ago I wrote a book, and the name of the book is Don't Just Stand There, Sell Something. And now I'm writing a book on personality styles, something that was very hard to do. It took 2 years to write a book, but I have a very good co-author, my good friend Trevor Hayes, that is an excellent writer, I'm good at getting the words down, but he's very good at putting it together in the right English. I more or less speak my words down on paper, where he gets it into a form so that people could better read it. So writing, very important. And when we write, we want to be accurate. We want to make sure that the right message is conveyed so that there is not an issue of trust. We want to be to the point and not use extra words. Another thing we want to do is write at the level of the reader. Use familiar words, words that they could understand, words that they're familiar with. Let me give you some examples. I'm going to read from page 135 in your booklet on avoid dangling expressions. And one of the examples is, Dr. Ellis gave a presentation on the use of drugs in our auditorium. That's not how you want to do it. The right way is, Dr. Ellis gave a presentation in our auditorium on the use of drugs. Also, another bad way, bad approach, is Robin explained the proposal to Joy, but she was not happy with it. Okay, who wasn't happy with it? Joy or Robin? What's more succinct and clear is, Robin explained the proposal to Joy, but Joy was not happy with it. Then we better understand that was Joy. Also, acronyms, and I mentioned this last time, I believe last week, is that with acronyms, if you write them down, for instance, when I look at the contract, I'm not sure if I understand the T's and C's. Now, that's very familiar in the business world for me, but for you, and actually I had this happen in a class of business folks, they didn't understand what T's and C's were, which are terms and conditions. So we want to spell out acronyms and not just put acronyms. Also, they can be misunderstood. If I wrote down, if I was writing a memo, and I said, well, we have a CD. Well, what's a CD? A CD could be a compact disc, or it could be a note from the bank that's drawing interest. So we need to clarify what we're doing there. Also, let's turn to page 136. Short, simple words. Great example here. To recapitulate our utilization of adulterated water precipitated the unterminable delays. Can't even say it. And what we should do is say, in short, our use of impure water caused the endless delays. That sentence will hit every audience. It's simple words. It's to the point. So you could use words at the bottom. Here, there's examples of needlessly long words instead of the preferred shorter, like endeavor, which is to try, or fluctuate, vary, initiate. Use the word start. Recapitulate is to review. And then on the next page, 137, concrete language, don't use. The vehicle broke down several times recently. The way it should be is, the delivery van broke down 3 times last week. More specific language. That's what we want to do. When we're writing, we want to be specific as possible and use the facts. Next one, and that's slang. On page 138, there's some sayings that companies use based on their corporate culture. Things like, according to our records, company policy requires, do not hesitate to, for your information. We really don't want to use slang or cliches. Also, on the next page, on page 139 at the bottom, some other slang is, oh, it's going to open up a can of worms, or they're going to chew me out, or it got wiped out, zonked out, security blanket. Use your noodle, which of course is not a golf ball, it's your head. So we want to be careful and not, we want to avoid using language like that. It's just not professional. And then redundancy on page 140. Good example. Avoid redundancy. What we don't want to do is say, signing both copies of the lease is a necessary requirement. What we should say is, signing both copies of the lease is necessary. We don't need to say the word requirement. And then finally, if you look on the page, page 141 at the top, new beginner, new discovery. We don't need the word new. And when it comes to assemble together, combine together, that's, you don't need to use the word together. or connect up, divide up. You don't need the word up. So those are things that we want to avoid when it comes to writing. We want to be short, succinct, clear, and also convey a message of honesty and trust by being active. Now, when it comes to active and passive voice, just turn to page 147, and there's just a couple of examples right under active and passive voice. Active voice is, Best Buy offers a full refund on all orders. And passive is, a full refund on all orders is offered by Best Buy. So, really want to be more active in our approach. Active voice, the subject performs the action expressed by the verb. In the passive, the subject receives the action expressed by the verb. And then finally at the bottom, what not to do, a very logical argument was presented by Hal. What we want to say is, Hal presented a very logical argument. Now let's go ahead and turn to page 270. And on 270, what we see is rhetorical questions. Let's talk about questions right now. And questioning techniques are extremely important. In sales, there are two types of questions. An open-ended question, which basically starts out by saying, how do you, what do you, why do you, which gets an open conversation. And especially when talking to customers, and we talked about strategic listening, I have a saying, he or she that talks the most is in least control. When you're with a customer, when you're talking with an employee, you want them to do the majority of the talking so that you're getting the information needed to make decisions, to better communicate, to understand where they are. And that's really very, very important. That's open-ended. Close-ended questions is when the answer is either yes or no. So, do you? And that would give, or if I was to say, are you wearing a blue tie? No. Are you wearing a white tie? No. Or a green tie? No. Or the open-ended question is, what color tie are you wearing? Which saves a lot of time and effort. But what we want to do is use open and closed-ended questions just to keep the conversation going. And we don't want to bombard someone with a lot of questions at once, because that would become more of an interrogation. Questions I like to ask are more along the line of, what are some of the challenges you're facing? Because if we could start asking questions about opening up a conversation on some of the challenges, then we could understand the direction to go in. And on page 270, we're looking at rhetorical questions. And rhetorical question is often effective as an opening sentence. Okay, is asked strictly to get the reader thinking about a topic. Jesus was excellent at asking rhetorical questions. And you can see there at the bottom, the not is, how would you like to save our department $7,500 yearly? Well, of course. And the question, not then the but, what do you think the labor costs are for changing just one light bulb? 25, 10, more? So simply yes or no questions rarely make good lead-ins, because pondering an answer doesn't require much thought. We want to use open-ended questions. And Jesus was just outstanding at that. If you want to take a look at some examples of the questions he asked, he asked some very simple questions to his disciples. How many loaves do you have? Why? Two disciples arguing. He said, what were you arguing about along the road? He liked to ask questions to conjure up absurd situations, like in Matthew 5, verse 13. If salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? Well, the answer is it can't. Another one in Mark 4, verse 21, he says, do you bring in a lamp to put it under a bowl or under a bed? Instead, don't you put it on a stand? It defeats the whole purpose of lighting a lamp. So what does he mean by that? In Luke 6, verse 41, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in someone else's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? he asked a lot of questions, and then he would give a parable. And the parable basically would be the would help answer the questions he wants everybody to ponder on. And Jesus was the master at that. He would also return a question with a question. When the Pharisees would ask him a question, he would come back right away and ask them a question and put them on the spot. So questioning techniques are very, very important. And finally, and let's go to page 390 for the last segment of today. And on 390, it just gives you a summary of examples of open and closed. Open, what is your opinion of the NAFTA treaty? Page 391. And a close-ended is, how much of your firm's business is attributable to Canadian or Mexican sales? Closed, do you agree or disagree with the proposal? And the open-ended question is why? The close will be, will it have an effect on your own firm? The open is, in what way? So questioning techniques extremely important, especially in sales. I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. We're going to be giving some case studies, activities, and we'll see you at the next lesson. Thanks.